You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
As a pharmacy profession, we talk a lot about provider status as leaders in healthcare. Being a leader in healthcare requires more than what a pharmacist understands or has studied to become an expert in medication knowledge. And with experience, is the leading guide for patients and physicians as a team to ensure effectiveness of therapies. Medications, digital therapeutics, documented health programs, diet, so many other aspects of total health, the pharmacist is in the driver's seat to ensure the safety and the effectiveness of modern medicine does what it was intended to do, enable all of us to live longer, happier, healthier lives. Pharmacists truly are the hub of healthcare. Today, I have the pleasure to interview two amazing healthcare visionaries. Our first guest is no stranger to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Dr. John Nosta is one of the most influential and eloquent leaders in today's digital health market. His work presents the impressive perspectives medicine and technology have to offer. As on previous episodes, John transforms words and ideas into real-life solutions. His passion and willingness to improve patient lives and medical practice make John Nosta one of the most valued digital health influencers in all of healthcare. With his strong background in science and marketing, John is a popular scientific thinker and author who's also a proud member of the Google Health Advisory Board. Last but not least, he is notable as the founder of Nosta Lab, which is a leading foundation that empowers innovative thinking in digital health. Our next guest is a leader in global communications with one of the world's most influential global communication agencies, Finn Partners. Gil Bashi is the managing partner of Finn Partners. At the center of Gil's life and work is the belief that communication is a vital part of healthcare. Gil champions the talent and ideas of the nation's healthcare agency of the year. Gil is passionate about public health in everything he does. He serves on the NHLBI GenTAC work group, examining how genetics impact cardiovascular disease, and the Health Tech Advisory Committee for mHealth Israel. Gil is a member of the American Pharmacists Association and believes in the effectiveness of the pharmacist. Gil is always ready to share knowledge as a columnist of PM 360 magazine, a key speaker on patient advocacy and health communications, and co-editor of the book Branding Health Services, Defining Yourself in the Marketplace. I'm excited to deliver an amazing discussion in healthcare through leadership and collaboration for the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. Thank you for listening. Pharmacy Podcast Nation, this is the host and founder of the Pharmacy Podcast Network, Todd Urey. I couldn't be more excited today. I'm bringing back Mr. John Nosta, my digital health godfather, and a special guest, Gil Bashi from Finn Partners, which is one of my most favorite PR publications because they dig down into meaningful, reliable communications within the healthcare space on many different angles. Gil, welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation.
Todd, thank you so much. I have to say that we already share a common interest. John Nosta is both of our favorites. And whenever John and I connect in it, you know, actually the last 2 weeks, I think it's been on a daily basis, John, you know, sparks fly. Mm-hmm. Now, both agreement and disagreement. And I think our listeners today, those that are, you know, watching on Twitter, will find that we have a lot to say.
Mm. John, welcome back to the Pharmacy Podcast.
Thanks. Todd, the last time we spoke in person, I think, was at HIMSS.
That's right, it was.
To see how that emerges and that this is sort of the communication inflection point where what we're doing now is going to be so important. So it's always a pleasure to chat, Todd.
Thank you. it was necessary. With HIMSS being canceled for 2020, we all are looking for sources of collaboration and networking. And I think podcasting and video casting and all of our content creators out there, it's more important than ever before. I don't want to be the voice today. I want Gil and John to have a discussion. And if you don't realize who these two gentlemen are and the impact that they've made to our healthcare system, not only in the United States, but also abroad, just understand the ability to learn from these two gentlemen in the leadership that they provide to our healthcare healthcare space. John Nosta is a technology theorist and digital health expert. He's regarded as one of the top disruptors in technology and innovation. He's a theologist as well within digital health, and he's the president of Nosta Lab. And I've been very impressed with him over the years. He's been a guest on the Pharmacy Podcast four other times. So thank you so much, John, for coming back. Gil, I want you to give your overview of not only yourself, but also Finn Partners.
Well, Todd, thank you very much. And John, thank you too. You know, Finn Partners is one of the world's largest integrated marketing communications agencies. We specialize in a broad array of industry sectors: technology, finance, consumer products, travel and lifestyle, and of course, health. I have the privilege of leading our global health practice, which is one of the largest in the world today. We span 19 different nations. We're in predominantly five different sectors of healthcare. All five are on the front lines right now as we deal with this global pandemic, COVID-19. We're very much involved in the payer sector, the patient sector, the policy sector, the health provider sector, and of course, the product innovation sector. All of these sectors that make up the health ecosystem of healthcare are on the front lines of both providing us with accurate information, or what we'll call authoritative voice, and coming up with the innovative solutions that our globe is looking toward to get us back into some semblance of day-to-day life. John and I are our world sort of often connects. John and I have had the privilege of working together in our past history, and we have a great deal of fondness for each other. And that fondness also allows us to disagree, always respectfully and sometimes strongly, but I think will make it very interesting for the listener today. Throughout my career, I've also participated in these health ecosystem environments. I started my career as a health provider, and I'm also a proud member of the American Pharmacists Association from my earlier training. I then went into government for a few years and certainly have a deep appreciation for how it works. I was a lobbyist both on the federal and state level for some time, and then moved into the communications and marketing area. I was privileged to be part of one of the first integrated marketing organizations in healthcare, and then moved on to lead large organizations, global organizations, including being a CEO of one of the largest. Also did a stint in private equity, but obviously as part of Finn Partners, privileged to lead really an outstanding team that doesn't see themselves as a business or an agency. They see themselves really as public health professionals who are communicating on the behalf of society with accurate information so we can make informed choice.
I want to give an example before we turn things over to John Nosta about the importance of this communication that was referenced by Gil. Pharmacists, listeners out there, and my dear Pharmacy Podcast Nation, there's an organization called Dados Health. And Finn Partners is caring for that organization's communication in such a vital and important time. And there's an article called, which I'll have in the show notes, called Dados Launches Field-Proven COVID-19 Telemedicine Solution for Hospitals Deployable Within 48 Hours. And this was a piece and in CARE, once again, that that Finn Partners, their client, it was very important to have this information out, which was published on the 17th. So bravo, Gil, that you are truly caring for not only your clients, but obviously how they're touching the rest of the world.
Yeah, I think, Todd, that you and the listeners today our pharmacy community are really on the front lines of being trusted sources of information. And I think that in the absence of being able to reach a physician, the go-to health professional for this nation, most certainly, but the world, are people in pharmacy. And there's no surprise that pharmacists historically have been seen as the most trusted of all professionals. And therefore, that translates right now into health professionals. I don't know if John will agree or disagree with this statement, but I'd say there's a handful of people I certainly would trust right now with, you know, who knows what. One would certainly be Anthony Fauci, Tony Fauci of the CDC. In this nation would be the person who I perk up and listen to. Perhaps another would be Dr. John White, who's the chief medical officer of WebMD. But I would say after those two, on a who's going to give me good direction of what I need to do now, pharmacy. Pharmacy is in the front lines, and they have that responsibility. And John, you may say, no, I don't think so. But I think that's my take right now, both as a household member and as a healthcare communicator.
Well, let me chime in. I agree, probably, 99%, Gil, that, as I've said in the past and many times to Todd, my mom had, 15 or 20 doctors, but she only had one pharmacist. And to me, that establishes really the first line of defense in information. Now, that's the good news. Let me tell you the bad news. The bad news is that the burden is falling on the shoulders of the pharmacy community to be informed. Yes. And that's in today's world, there's a lot of information. So for me, I think it comes down to the C word. And the C word is really three things, as I sort of frame this up. One is the knowledge of the coronavirus. Right? What is it? How it spreads? What are some of the epidemiologic issues? The second one are the clinical parameters. What do I do if I have a headache, if I have a fever? When do I get tested? So a lot of that is going to fall on the back of the pharmacist.
I love that, John.
Right? But there's another one, Gil, and I think this is at the heart of what we do. And to me, that is all empowered by one other C word, and that's communication. Because unless the pharmacist can communicate factual, validated information, it's meaningless, right? So, that's it's just important. I think that's where the pharmacist stands at the first line of defense today.
John, I couldn't agree with you more on that. And on that respect, I think mm-hmm. we're 100% in agreement. Mm-hmm. The issue you touched on that I think is so important for pharmacy at this moment is that pharmacists have always been the sort of the practical communicator. You talked about your mom's mm-hmm. experience that she had 10 doctors, mm-hmm. 20 doctors, mm-hmm. 100 doctors, and she had one pharmacist. Yeah. And that pharmacist is the aggregator of all of this, like the blue pill and the red pill and the inhaler. All pharmacists are really getting a vast amount of calls. Should I get a prescription for Tamiflu? Should I get an inhaler? What inhaler? And also, what happens if a child or a family member has a concomitant situation, a condition mm-hmm. that places them at a heightened risk for COVID-19? I think a lot of worried households are calling into their pharmacist and asking, what do I do? And that really brings us to a place that I know, John, you are passionate about, I'm passionate about, Todd is, our audience is, and that is about authenticity and accuracy of information. And I'm concerned about that. I don't know about you, John, but right now our news media is so desperate, and understandably, that 24/7 beat of COVID-19 on the screen and keep eyeballs and listeners glued to the TV set, that what happens is that it drowns out occasionally the authoritative voice of who do I listen to for direction? Who do I listen to for direction right now? And that's why I think you said, where is pharmacy getting its information from? Mm-hmm. We trust them the most. How do we as a society recognize they are on the front lines? What are we doing as a society, whether it's CDC or WHO or HHS or APHA? What are we doing to make sure every pharmacist in this nation who is interacting on the phone or seeing a patient has mm-hmm. that accurate information. Do you have any suggestions for the listeners today?
Well, you know, one of the problems I see is that the nature of information today is coming out so fast that it's hard to keep current. I mean, certainly if you follow me on Twitter and you on Twitter, you're going to get the leading information a bit unfiltered. That's my sort of worldview, that I'd rather have the facts out there and help the collective decide. But what I think is interesting is that the pharmacist is in the position of actually being the search engine, of actually being the filter. And so I think that it's going to take a lot of work on behalf of the pharmacy community. And that's why I think your communications to them about realistic, practical information to help guide everything from flattening the curve and social isolation to what is the value of some of these, you know, some of these drugs out there. For example, like hydroxychloroquine. Mm-hmm. Which is a currently available med, right? I bet you a lot of patients on rheumatoid arthritis are on it now. And you know, what do you do when you go to the refill at the pharmacist? Right. So I think that it's the heart of the dilemma that I see is how can we get appropriate information to the filter, which is the pharmacist.
Yeah, you know, I think we're, you know, you just brainstorm. You know, we're talking mm-hmm. often about telehealth right now. And mm-hmm. you know, connecting patients to authoritative medical voices. And I realize, I don't know about your mother, I don't know about you and Todd, but I know from this household alone how many times our household has called into our neighborhood pharmacist. Again, we have one pharmacist like you. You know, we're not sort of jumping around. We have a relationship with that pharmacist. And we've been calling that pharmacist, you know, about can we renew our prescription, or you know, can we get this, or hey, we only have the prescription for X amount of days, can we get it for 90 days? And mm-hmm. you know, our pharmacist is having to field all of these questions. So you know, I think one thing for the pharmacy community is, you know, how do they begin to sort of crowdsource and aggregate best practice, and how do they turn to, you know, great organizations like APHA to really help them develop sort of that customer-facing policy. That's really probably a hole that needs to be filled quickly by the organization. I'm certain it is, but I think it would be helpful for the pharmacy community to make sure that they're getting what they need from those authoritative sources. And who do they listen to? And I agree with you 100%. I think that the Twitterverse mm-hmm. You know, is sort of like, you know, it's almost like you're in a room with tons of people screaming right now digitally, mm-hmm. and it must be overwhelming for people in the health profession and people in our sort of allied professions to sort through what's going on. I mean, I'd be curious from you, John, what, you know, you are really an aggregator of aging mm-hmm. information. I tend to lean, as you do often, I tend to lean toward authoritative voice, vetted by multiple sources,
yes.
and then shared on a platform that I can trust. For instance, and by the way, for clarification, not a client of my organization. I'm in touch with them. We respect each other. WebMD, for instance. WebMD's information is vetted by, I believe, more than 100 physicians, and then signed off on by a chief medical officer, and then pushed out. And so it's one of the platforms I personally look at because I know that they are a trusted source of vetted information. And again, that's why I look at CDC, mm-hmm. WHO, and also a source that I think people overlook in this country that I think has done a great public service job. I actually also look to the UK, to the National Health Service there. I think they've done an excellent job of being transparent and truthful and timely. Three T's. You also often talk about C's, John. Mm-hmm. I talk about the three T's.
There you go.
Transparency, truth, and uh-huh. timely.
Now, I, on the other hand, don't provide that service on my Twitter feed. And I distinctly move away where I kind of jump into more speculation. But I call it speculation. A recent tweet of mine sort of was riffing on this idea of using antibodies derived from patients who have either recovered or had the virus, right? This is an important therapeutic process that may develop a vaccine or some kind of immunological therapy. So for me, I ask the question, what is the potential of extracting antibodies from those who are recently deceased? And, you know, that's a complicated question. It may not be physiologically appropriate, but it goes to the idea of organ transplantation. If we have many deaths, maybe there's an opportunity to leverage antibodies from these people. So my Twitter feed, Gil, unlike yours, which tends to be much more authoritative, I want to stir the pot. I want to ask some questions. When it's ambiguous or confusing, I'll say that, you know, but it's followed up by interesting sort of commentary from a group of people. But here's the point I want to make. Number one, Twitter is a search engine. It's one of the best search engines in the world. If you go and type in coronavirus, right? You go type in coronavirus into Google, and I love Google. What are you going to get? You're going to get amazingly deep information that goes on and on and on and on. If you type in coronavirus on Twitter, you see what people are talking about today at this very moment. So for me, leveraging the immediacy of that search engine is extraordinarily important. Now, here's the problem. Most people don't use Twitter. They're not comfortable with it as a search engine. So a lot of pharmacists might go on now because it's an urgent situation. They need to get smart, to know what's going on, to communicate to their patients, to their customers too, right? The problem is they don't have the relationships. They're not following Gil. They're not following Todd. They're lost in the sea of confusion. That's why it's important for people to get on Twitter, get your relationships, build your friends, know your sources, so that when something happens, good or bad, you have that sort of intellectual template to guide you forward. So for me, I think that's a real, real, real important aspect.
I love that, John. And by the way, I would say if people were following one person on Twitter, I definitely think follow John Nostek. But if you want to follow two, you can add Gil Batch.
Absolutely.
But I do want to dissect what you just said, because I would say that this is such a fast moving issue right now, COVID-19, that let's face it, I think that we your role as a provocateur or as someone who raises edgy ideas is needed, because we're actually right now living in the world of hypothesis when it comes to this. Now, 2 weeks ago, we said it's basically human-to-human contact or surface contact. Now, 2 days ago, what started to sort of like come out before, it might be airborne contact. So we've got to start from the premise of, and this is, by the way, I think one of medicine's biggest Achilles heels. Medicine historically doesn't like to say, I don't know. And yet it takes courage to say, I don't know. From I don't know comes the sense of the quest to learn and to understand. And right now, our society, from medicine, from the medical community, including pharmacy, of course, is we're not used to hearing from our medical experts and our frontline medical providers, physicians, nurses, technicians, pharmacists, public health officials. We're not used to hearing a chorus of, I don't know. So instead of saying, I don't know, they're too often, what's happening is we're being bombarded, I think, 24/7 at this moment with hypothesis after hypothesis. And what I love about your feed is that you are synthesizing kind of the boldest and probably the most critical of some of those hypotheses. So I'm going to actually disagree with you about you, John, about one thing. I don't think that you're... I'm going to tell you what I'm going to disagree with.
All right.
I actually think that whether it's intentional or unintentional, you've been, and I've been watching your feed very closely over the last few days, you're the synthesizer of the most probably critical hypotheses that are being raised in the global medical community right now. So though we don't know if they're accurate or not, if I wanted to sort of shut down what are the big hypotheses and the little hypotheses, I probably would be following John Nostek for the big hypothesis.
Well, I'm stealing my ideas from you, from Elon Musk, who looks at hydroxychloroquine, you know, with a critical eye. I follow, you know, Scott Gottlieb and Secretary Azar and, you know, really big thinkers. That's my job, is to distill some of the thinking. But, you know, so what are you seeing? For me, I see a couple interesting things. I have my screen open. I'm trying to figure out what Trump said at noon, at 11 o'clock. He had a conference. I know he's going to do something very fundamental, and I think it's important. Everybody knows flatten the curve, right? Todd, you must have tweeted that expression a few times, right?
Yep, exactly.
So flatten the curve, flatten the curve, flatten the curve. The data shows us that flattening the curve leaves us above the threshold of clinical capacity, of hospital capacity. Mm. So it'll lower deaths, it'll help, but the way this has been articulated in social media and even in the press is through a cartoon. In other words, they show an art director who shows a peak, and then they make the peak lower. And the reality
is, you've used that in your Twitter feed.
I'm complaining about it, but now that's the point. The real hashtag for me is treat the curve, and I think this is part of the inflection point we're seeing now, particularly with the president's press conference, that he's pushing forward on regulations, on establishing therapeutic modalities from existing therapies to experimental therapies to a variety. But to me, it's not only flattening, which is an active passive. I know that's a weird expression, but it's like, go hide, right? There's a passivity to that. Social isolation. It's critical. It's important. But I like the idea of treating the curve. You know, we've got people looking at natural killer cells, NK cells, Bob Hariri's company, Cellularity. It's looking at interesting modalities to help treat. And I think as today is the new sort of World War II, today is the new Manhattan Project with COVID-19. I think that's a real important area to kind of push on. We're seeing
Let me add to this. So yes, we have to treat the curve. And on one hand, we're talking about some important high tech, like Bob Hariri's, you know, Cellularity, yes, company, or mm-hmm. or Todd was talking about, you know, Datos, or we're talking about, you know, sort of mammoth community health systems that are national health systems, like Vanderbilt Medical Center, you know, in mm-hmm. Tennessee is a leader. We have so many leaders around our country that are doing exceptional things. But, you know, I know this is going to sound sort of like the forgotten aspect of all this. But one of the reasons why we need to flatten that curve, bend the curve and flatten that curve, mm-hmm. is actually we need to get some basic health supplies into the medical system mm-hmm. to protect our frontline health workers. And that is sort of like N95 masks and face covers and you know, sort of disposable gears and good gloves, and all of the basics of the supply chain are lacking right now. So we have retired doctors and nurses who are being mobilized to deal with the influx. And what I'm seeing on Twitter as a news feed right now mm-hmm. is how many of our frontline health professionals still don't have the proper patient-facing. And it's not just our healthcare professionals. If someone has a or a cold and they're not certain, they don't know if they're positive for COVID-19 or not, obviously mm-hmm. they too need the right type of sanitary gear, even disinfectant wipe for their doorknob if they're sharing a residence with other people. Mm-hmm. Try to get that at a supermarket or at a pharmacy. And the reason I think pharmacists play such a critical role, when you go into your neighborhood pharmacy, you know, we tend to think of pharmacy obviously as the back of the back of the pharmacy, where the pharmacist is. And mm-hmm. and we forget that many of our pharmacies, more and more, have moved to large chains, CVS and Walgreens and Duane Reade and Rite Aid and all of these mammoth chains that are serving our nation. But actually to the listeners who are owning community-based pharmacies, and I think that's about, and Todd, you and your listeners will have to call in or tweet and correct, I think it's still about 30% of our nation's pharmacies are owned by pharmacists. And mm-hmm. and these people have established their pharmacy not only as the back of the counter, there's the front of the counter, which includes everything from cosmetics to toiletries to household goods. And people go to pharmacies for their health care. And that right now is also in disposables. Everything from the wipe to the Purell to everything they believe they can use to help bend that curve down. So we've got to support pharmacy on the basic level.
Gil, I have a question for you. I want to reference your wonderful recent publication, The Pandemic of Poor Communications. It's in Medium. You also have it on LinkedIn. You know, and it talks about a centralized authoritative, you know, source that's sometimes driving fear instead of action. But I want to go into something a little bit off the beaten path here. There is a person who I think has been surprisingly quiet, yet surprisingly involved in this. And it's Tom Hanks.
Yes.
I'm very curious because, you know, you're the consummate advertising and PR pro, right? I don't think there's a more liked actor, more respected actor in the United States, if not the world. He's been tweeting, I think, twice.
Yes, as a respected person.
Does he have a social responsibility? I mean, you know, just in terms of, you know, I mean, when Rock Hudson came out HIV positive, when certain people have come forward with their conditions, they've created a sense of empathy and togetherness. I'm curious where you see that evolving.
Boy, that's a loaded question, John, and I think we've got
to jump into it. You don't have to use Tom Hanks.
No, we've got to jump into it. You know, on the basic level, we hear a lot about infected and sadly, tragically, deaths. And we hear the percentage. And obviously, we don't know what the percentage is because we don't know how many people truly are infected with COVID-19. We know how many people have been screened positive. And we do the ratios of death to the screen. So it is a frightening virus, but you know, I think we're going to find when this is behind us that the big takeaway was we have to work together as a world health world to deal with these pandemics. But specifically to Tom Hanks and what he symbolizes, and Tom Hanks' greatness as an actor, whether it's in Castaway or whether it's in, you know, any of his great motion pictures, of which Mr. Rogers, Tom Hanks symbolizes every man. That's his strength. He's a down to earth and big. He's just this down to earth person who lives a down to earth life. Mm-hmm. You see him as a family man, as a husband, as someone coming out, saying I'm COVID-19 or coronavirus positive. And so the importance of Tom Hanks is beyond Tom Hanks. I think when you mention Tom Hanks, you're talking about the importance of the everyman, iconic everyman person. As Rock Hudson was for his, he was the chiseled best leading man in a movie. So let me deal with that. I think we have an information void right now, and that information void is terrifying the world. We don't have enough information about the journey of people who were coronavirus positive and now are beyond it. What did they go through? What did they experience?
Let me interrupt you for just one second, okay? Just one second, which I find interesting, is that Hanks is 66 years old. He's in a high risk group. He's also has type 2 diabetes. He is, I think, reflective of some of the people who have the highest level of concern and potentially risk. So I just think that that's such an interesting sort of constellation.
Did not know about the type 2 diabetes, but that's an added point.
Yeah.
It's an added point. So I do feel there's an information void right now. I am going to point a gentle finger at media at this moment. We need to have more aggregated information about people who have recovered from COVID-19 to understand what they experienced, what they felt. From their physical condition to their emotional condition to the questions they were asking their healthcare provider and what remote guidance they were getting from their healthcare provider. Uh-huh. And in the absence of that information, our anxiety levels go through the roof. And I think that where pharmacy can play a great role, because let's face it, anybody who's homesick, what are they doing? They might be taking Tylenol. They might be taking a cough medicine. They might be taking a lozenge. Simple stuff that they get at their pharmacy, of course. Mm-hmm. But that simple stuff aggregated right now, actually provides us with some form of reinsurance and direction. So we don't have that.
Gil, we talk about what people are doing. They're taking this pill and they're sitting home. They're consuming more information than they ever have. Think about that. People are now sort of stuck in their house, watching a lot of TV, maybe a lot of news. So they're literally overdosing on information that could be toxic, because it's just, if it bleeds, it leads. And I'm guilty of that. When I write a story, I think that headline's got to have a little bit of clickbait. And I'm guilty to that. But, I go back to the analogy of the Manhattan Project or World War II, of rallying citizens and industry, changing GE for making certain medical tools into building ventilators, that kind of thing. But you know who one of the most powerful forces was? And I'm going to go back to this because it really kind of irritates me a little bit. It's that one of the most powerful forces in World War II was the movie industry that took Jimmy Stewart, who was a brigadier general, and put him into films, into training films, and Ronald Reagan. And I think we have to muster that kind of voice from Hollywood, who's been largely absent. They should turn the television.
That is, particularly with Tom Hanks on the front line. We used to see, obviously, I'm not that old. I have age, and I hope to have more age at this particular time. But, Hollywood played a frontline role. Of course, there's a great documentary out of the five directors, including one who was at Midway during the attack on Midway, the Battle of Midway, who filmed the attack on that island at the time. And those brief newscasts at a difficult time in American history, we forget when those five were enlisted and went to Europe and the Pacific Theater, those were not positive times in the effort. Mm-hmm. But they provided, again, those three T's, right? Transparency, truth, timeliness. And I think we need much more of that. By the way, I really believe that's the essence of the pharmacy practice. Pharmacy has never been about shrug your shoulders. In many cases, the gurus of the world of medicine, are in their white lab coats, discussing policy and aggregated data. Your pharmacist, and obviously there are hospital pharmacists who are on the front lines of figuring out where the supply chain is going to come from and how to deal with needs. It's the pharmacist of the institution that's managing the institution's therapeutic budget. It is the pharmacist that's trying to figure out, make medicines, going back to the historic practice of pharmacy, which is, I don't have it, but I have the materials that could make it, and therefore I'll have to compound it. I don't think that this nation actually recognizes the magnitude of what's going on behind the scenes beyond the ER. There are departments like radiology, pharmacy, and so forth that are supporting the ER system right now. These are the unheralded heroes of our health system as well. So I think there's a lot going on that Hollywood actually could be doing. But I actually want to correct you on something when you talk about the edgy headline, the John Nosta edgy headline, which is true. I love your headlines. Yeah. I love, if you stopped being the number one digital health influencer of America, I know that the New York Post has a job for you as a headline editor.
Not the Times?
But the reason...
Come on.
No. Suddenly they're getting close to the Post. But
But
the reason I want to deal with you separate from that and why to follow you, I'm not giving you a get out of prison card here. You're upfront of who you are. You don't pretend to be a news source. You're an agitator, and that's your strength. And you're an honest agitator. You never move off that mark, but. But unlike some agitators who really like to make people's lives miserable and are agitating at the expense of the other, that is not your style at all. I think that your agitation is actually to be the voice of the nation's concerns, and that's one of your core strengths. So I see you in a more positive light than you see yourself at times.
I want to comment in on the pharmacist aspect. We are relying on our fellow human beings to step up and serve our public, and our pharmacist leaders have to fall back on that education and experience to literally save lives. And I think the both of you are touching on aspects of our healthcare system today. But guess what? Today, we are literally seeing transformations in how we're acting on something that generations haven't experienced since World War II. And imagine the impact, the social impact, and everything that we know falling back to our healthcare professional front lines, our physicians, our nurses, our pharmacists, who are in the midst of something that is unprecedented. So when I was setting this interview up with the both of you, the gong of your voices in what is modern and what is relevant today is so effervescent, and it's so needed to have organizations like yours, Gil, and the gong of reason and the theology and your view of digital health, John. This is so important. I feel so privileged to deliver this to our listeners today.
Todd, we can't thank you enough. John,
pleasure.
It's always, I adore speaking with you always. And Todd, it is just a privilege to participate in this. And I want to thank you for bringing all of us together.
And Todd, just to all the healthcare professionals out there who are really struggling through very, very difficult times, you know, we want to help you however we can. And it's the pharmacist, it's the nurse, it's the technician, man, it's the housekeeping people that helps desanitize and sanitize rooms. It's an extraordinary effort, and it's tantamount to a military effort. And I just have to say that, you know, I'm just proud to be able to support that dynamic.
Amen.
Yep, amen.
Well, you both are invited back at any time. Gil, I have plans to reach back out to you and your amazing organization and where you're touching our fellow citizens and human beings through your communications. But John, thank you for coming back for your fifth appearance on the Pharmacy Podcast. I just want to thank you both.
Thank you.
I'll talk soon. Bye-bye now. Stay well.
You were listening to the Pharmacy Podcast. We were with Gil Bashi with Finn Partners, Mr. John Nosta, my favorite digital health godfather and expert with Nosta Lab. And we thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.
We are delighted to invite someone who happens to be the number one global influencer in digital health and one of the most popular speakers around the globe, presenting vibrant and insightful perspectives on the future of health innovation. And he quotes, I quote him by saying, "Technology and society don't stand in opposition. They are profoundly synergistic and will transform humanity in bold and important ways." Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome with me on the stage, founder of Nosta Lab, a digital health think tank, as he talks about technology and humanity at an inflection point. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Nosta.
We see a fundamental shift in care from control to collaboration. Back in the day, you would go to the doctor, and the doctor, he would give you a pill. You'd take the pill and you'd get on with yourself. Interestingly, the pill he gave you was probably something that the pharma companies told him to prescribe. Today, we see engagement. Today we go to the doctor and she asks about the nature of our care, asks us about what kind of data we're using in terms of fitness, wellness, observing blood glucose levels as an example. So we're seeing this awareness, this social awareness emerge now. I don't think we really get a sense of the role of data in our lives. People today and yesterday talked about data as currency, as data, as the new oil. I don't think that's far from the truth. I think that really is. We are data factories. But sometimes when we hear the word big data, it's like, all right, it's like a paradigm shift, right? It's one of those marketing words that people put into their presentation. But I do believe that big data is extraordinarily important. Here's the way I look at it. Big data is the third fundamental window into humanity. Third fundamental window into humanity. It's that big, it's that important. What was the first window? The telescope. Think of what the telescope did. Think of what happened to Copernicus, right? The whole notion of blasphemy. The first was the telescope, the second was the microscope. It allowed us to see this world vastly smaller than ours, but still extraordinarily important. And in that context, the third one is data. Data will become extraordinarily important. We will be able to connect the dots that will advance clinical diagnosis, advance social engagement, that will advance human history.